Welcome to Sounds Of, a podcast created by Drum and Brass with the support of Arts Council England and Leicester City Council, in which we explore the impact of art and music on our lives. Drum and Brass is a community interest company whose mission is to do music differently, and on March 26th we held a day of workshops, discussions and networking at Curve Theatre in Leicester called Doing Music Differently. Our aim was to bring together the ideas and energy of musicians, educators and community groups to tackle the lack of diversity in the UK's orchestras, bands and ensembles. Our presenters included Dr. Helen Miners, who is the School Head of Performing Arts and Associate Professor of Music at Kingston University, and the founder and co-chair of Equality, Diversity and Inclusion Music Studies Network UK. And Carol Leeming, MBE, a vocalist and vocal coach, a multi-award-winning multidisciplinary artist in literature, performing arts and digital media, and TEDx performer and speaker. Carol is well known on the Leicester music scene. John Sinclair came along to the conference and talked to the workshop leaders and participants and to some of the young musicians from the Drum and Brass No Bars Orchestra and their parents.
Well, welcome to The Curve. It's Doing Music Differently. Drum and Brass have organised this for the day. And one of the main organisers is Julie Hogarth, who's going to be opening the session at 10 o'clock. And great to be here now, isn't it? I know you've been waiting for a couple of years or so.
It's been a long time in the development. We got the funding before COVID and we've had to put it off a few times, but now it's happening. And I'm very excited. We've got some great people with us today.
And it's a lovely venue, isn't it?
Beautiful venue, beautiful day. We're being so well looked after by Joe and the team at The Curve, which is great.
And a big day ahead, really.
Massive, yes. We've got five workshops, all different ways of doing music. So it's participatory. Everyone's bringing instruments. Everyone's coming with an open mind and a kind of a verve to really explore and talk and network and light a fire.
And I know this morning you were kind of like, wow, it's today. It's kind of like, it's kind of got you a bit, hasn't it?
This feels like that Drum and Brass do things quietly in little places. And this is our moment to say, we're going to do this. We have been doing it. It's working. And we want to talk about that. And we also want to bring other people together in the directory, the Drum and Brass Music Directory, which is all about giving music makers a chance to really talk to their customers about what it is that they're offering. And for customers, potential music makers, people who think, oh, I'd like to play something, but I wouldn't know where to start. It gives those people some proper information about the choices that are available in Leicester, inclusive, open access, whatever.
And also you've got to look forward to other people speaking. You can sit back and relax and listen, can't you?
Absolutely, I'm first on, and once my introduction is over, I shall be absolutely getting involved with all the music myself.
Well, after Julie's comprehensive introduction to the conference, Davina Venkatasamy, a music therapist and one of the directors of Drum and Brass, took to the floor and explained how music education benefits everyone in society and how we need to remove barriers that stop people accessing music at grassroots level. Well, with Davina now, and that was a very interesting session there. It went on probably a bit longer than you thought it would as well.
Yes.
It's all about trying to get music education back in the system, it seems.
Yes, it's all about trying to grow people from the bottom so we have people at the top to choose. And if we don't grow them from the bottom, how are we going to have anyone at the top? So but it's when you start looking at grassroots, it's about having the systems in place to support those people. So there's those are barriers, the financial barriers, the physical barriers, and how do we start lowering those down in order to access people, give people access to music. And as we saw from the talk, the TED talk that was just shown there, music education benefits everyone, not just the people doing it, but society as a whole.
So, yeah, there was a bit in there saying that if you've got music education, it kind of helps you in other areas.
Yeah, absolutely. I really believe that. I feel that. I do that. So it's I live it. So I think people who do music, it's not necessarily... So my for instance, an example, my daughter has dyslexia, was diagnosed with dyslexia. She was just diagnosed with mild dyslexia. She's been doing the violin since she was 6 years old, 5 years old. So how much of that music stuff that she's been doing has helped her dyslexia, that means that she's got the skill set to then jump through hoops that she needs to jump through in education, that then gets measured as doing okay, when actually had she had no musical education, she may have been much lower down on that scale, or much more like more affected by the way that her brain is put together. And actually when she does music, perhaps that continues to grow her brain and do something different for her. So things you can't prove, things you can't measure, things that are just narratives, but actually are really powerful. And
lots of people giving their opinions in the room as well, Carol Leeming included, of
yes,
course.
Yes. So she's going to talk to us later about her opinions once more, so that'll be quite good. But, yeah, she's got a lot of experience about this kind of work, and also as a vocal coach and teaching, but also doing the work that she does about decolonisation. You know, she's thinking about all of these things that we're thinking about, and she's a good person to bring it all together.
Well, the conference participants came from a wide range of music education contexts and musical organisations. And I spoke to Christina Birkby, who's a director of the Leicester Musical Memory Box, and asked her for her reflections on the opening session led by Davina. Well, now with Christina, we've just been listening to Davina talking in there.
Yeah.
Kind of interesting discussion about access to music generally, wasn't it?
Yeah, it was all about music and how kind of it can be quite elitist, and my thoughts were a lot of the music education is geared towards the performance, and that kind of cuts out a huge part of the population, as well as sort of not having access to it, perhaps from financial or social sort of backgrounds. But for those people who aren't natural performers, then it kind of, you know, it doesn't really work for them. But I fully agree. The presentation was sort of talking about, you know, the fact that we're all musical beings and we're musical from birth. And so why is there that kind of huge exclusion of most of the population?
Almost elitism, yes.
Exactly, yeah.
And you're involved in a music thing yourself,
aren't you? Yeah, so I'm one of the directors of Leicester Musical Memory Box, and we deliver musical sessions around health and well-being, but primarily with people with dementia and memory loss and their carers, sort of in and around Leicester. And we do groups within the South Asian community as well. We've got a colleague who does
and that's an important area, because I think it makes people smile for a start.
No, it's great. We've, you know, there's a real sort of sense of community. We've brought people together, and we've brought the two communities together as well recently, which is something amazing. We really sort of want to grow that more, and we've actually seen since then that the members of the different groups are going to the other group as well. It's not like these two separate sessions.
Yeah.
So lots of kind of cultural exchange from that.
And this idea of having this at the Curve, that's a good idea as well.
Yeah, it's somewhere accessible for everybody. It's central. It's kind of good to use the space. You know, it's here.
It's a nice space.
It's a lovely space. And kind of seeing a bit more behind the scenes, kind of, that you don't necessarily go into.
Enjoy the rest of the day.
Thank you, John. Thanks.
Cheers. Dr. Helen Miners, School Head of Performing Arts and Associate Professor of Music at Kingston University and the founder and co-chair of Equality, Diversity and Inclusion Music Studies Network UK, led a workshop session in which she explained an inclusive music technique called sound painting, in which everyone can take part without needing to be able to read musical scores. She led the conference participants in a practical session, and this next clip begins with the sounds they created. Well, now with Helen Miners, after her session here. I've got people playing instruments. They were doing what they were told. You were giving them instruction. How did you feel it went?
I like the idea of doing what they were told. The method I was doing sound painting, I felt it went really well. So the idea is I take a proposition and I sign it using my body, so bodily gesture, to ask them to play a melody or a long tone or a rhythm. And then the point of it is, how do you relate to each other? How do you communicate by listening to create music without score, without preconception, without a particular stylistic label? It's just people in the room with whatever style they have, with whatever skills and technical capacity they have. So I love it. So we've had a wide variety of percussion instruments. We've had a flute player, a cornet player, two guitars, cello, and various other things. And it basically is, how do we start to think in a more democratic way to create music?
And you developed this over a period of time, of course.
Yes, yeah. I first came in touch with the method, God, when would it have been? 2006, I think, when I first met Walter Thompson, who developed this method. But I've used it in teaching to help students gain confidence in oral skills, analysis and improv. But I've used it also in expanding the curriculum. So when we talk about reimagining or decolonising the curriculum, to do that we need more voices, we need more bodies present, and this enables me to bring together, you know, a gamelan player or a trumpeter or a rap singer or an opera singer together and to create together. Despite their genre and cultural boundaries, they can be in that space, they can create music as one.
Yeah, it's about inclusivity, isn't it?
Absolutely about inclusivity, and that's why I love it. The first time I saw it, I'd not even thought about changing the methods of teaching. You sort of hand down curriculums, but this opened something in my head to think, there's another way. Why have I not thought about this before? How do I do it? How can I use it? So I did embed it in the curriculum in the degree, and used it as part of the assessment even, to support students in developing their, not just oral skills, but understanding of how to develop something in a context that they co-lead and co-construct. So it's not about a single composer, a single identity with somebody's intention, whatever that might be. But what's our intention? What are we doing at this point in time?
And it does include you. I mean, I was playing an instrument myself there and doing what was instructed. And you mentioned halfway through that there was some that made kids laugh as well.
Oh, there's loads of things makes kids laugh. So doing the extended technique, it's like you're looking through a kaleidoscope. So you put a circle around one eye and twiddle your other fingers in front of it. So it just looks funny. But the shape line, I describe that anything I do with the body, you just react to in the way you want. So if I went skipping around the room or jumping up and down, you can just respond in any way. So if you want to relax a group of kids, or if you're doing adult training about communication and marketing, that's one way to get people to laugh. If you've got a really dry space, do something that's not expected. Get somebody to laugh and then make music. Laugh's got pitch, it's got rhythm, it's got intensity, it's got dynamics. There's a lot in a laugh, so I work with that quite a lot with student groups.
We're about halfway through the day here at the Curve. It's been good, hasn't it?
It's been fantastic. The venue's great. It's really got a community sense. You can really see the aims from the images on the wall to bring in a diverse range of people. I'm really excited because we're about to hear the new orchestra that's been set up, which is all about bringing the orchestra into the centre of the city, and just by moving it where it is, as Davina was just telling us, it's made it more diverse, because you know you've got to think about how people get there, whether they've got the time, the money, the transportation. So by putting it right in the city, you're accessing people that can walk and just get on the bus to get to it.
Yeah, they're using an excerpt from a Charlie Chaplin movie as well.
Lovely. Oh, I love Charlie Chaplin. Again, physical theatre, that was what Charlie Chaplin was all about, wasn't he, as well as being a musician. Yeah.
Yeah, but good for the kids to learn, you know, again, some of them very little experience. Yeah. That's what it's all about, isn't
it? It's all about, and, you know, if you can get into a performance after just a couple of rehearsals, even when you're really early in an instrument, you get used to performing, it becomes a joy rather than, oh, I'm being assessed or it's a performance, it's a big thing. It's just part of what you do, let's enjoy it. And I like that philosophy that we've been talking about here today.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Cheers. Over the past 6 months, Drum and Brass has facilitated a collaborative project between the Leicester Symphony Orchestra and young players who live in the centre of Leicester and so reflect the grassroots makeup of the city. This collaboration has resulted in the creation of a new inclusive orchestra open to players of all ages and abilities. It's called the No Bars Orchestra, and on March the 5th they were invited to play at Leicester's De Montfort Hall as part of the LSO's 100 Years of Film Music Performance. Well, we're preparing once again to listen to the No Bars Orchestra. I was at De Montfort Hall when they played, and we've got
Raynan
and Father Eustace here. And now you're at the Curve. I mean, it's amazing, isn't
it? It's absolutely amazing. I mean, just the places that they're performing, it's encouraging the kids so much, you know, just making them feel that they can achieve anything, you know. De Montfort, now the Curve, you know, it's fantastic. And just to see the buzz, the kids that they get from playing, especially afterwards, you know. And, it's a good sense.
It's encouraging, isn't it?
It's really encouraging, you know. And I've seen Raynan excel in just being part of this sort of community, and he loves it, basically. Yeah, and as parents, we love it too.
Yeah, yeah. Good. How long have you been playing for now?
Since I was in year two.
Which was how long ago, you remember?
Around...
3 years or so?
Yes.
Yeah, so you're fairly experienced now, then?
Yes.
Are you really enjoying it? I mean, obviously, De Montfort was good, wasn't it?
Yes.
So you've been really looking forward to today as well?
Yes.
The Charlie Chaplin film, and we remember it more than he would, I think.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, that was absolutely magnificent. The way they performed that, and so in sync with the characters and the movie that was playing at the time, that we really appreciated.
It's
that,
really good idea, isn't it?
Fantastic idea, absolutely. I mean, it was just an amazing experience, and I'd encourage any parent and kids to get involved with this. This is, you know, it gives them a greater sense of accomplishment as well, you know, and a sense of community, which is really good.
Nobles Orchestra, off you go, guys.
Thank you.
notes.
Well, after a delicious lunch and time for some networking conversations, the conference participants were treated to a performance of classical tabla from Harry Trivedi, one of the founding members of Drum and Brass. Now with Harry Trivedi, and just hearing you play there, I mean, you've obviously been playing for a while. Just give us a bit of a history.
Hi, John. Yes, so I've been playing for a long time, really. Since I was three, I started learning. And before that, I was playing pots and pans, and my mum and dad thought he needs to play tabla.
So you're getting, what, lessons still? Or
still getting lessons, and so is my teacher.
Oh, really?
It's a never-ending journey.
Okay, so do you play along with other people, or is it very much an individual thing?
I do my solo stuff, but I work with bands, I work with jazz bands, different collectives that we have in Leicester.
And how about today? I mean, it's been a great event today, hasn't it?
Today's been great, yeah. A lot of good stuff has come out. I think time has been short. We need a longer session somehow.
But what's the idea for other people initially for you to join in with you?
Initially it was, but we couldn't hear each other, so... Yeah. I couldn't hear the piano, so it ended up being more solo. But it was just nice to play something.
And do you do gigs, or how does it work for you?
Yeah, we do gigs. I do gigs. I do solo gigs. I also do gigs for our band, Carsifar. We do gigs everywhere, release music, record, and yeah, it's just good fun.
And you've been involved with Drum and Brass for some time. Just give us a lowdown on how that happened.
Sure. So Drum and Brass started with me and Julie, 2013. Got together because we wanted to play music with people that we don't normally play music with, because you've got to be challenged as an artist. If I'm not challenged, I don't want to play. I need something to keep me inspired and learn.
And also, it's about inclusivity, isn't it? It's about getting more black people involved too.
Exactly, yeah. So our first one was East Meets West. That was our first project, trying to teach classical music to the Western side and the other way too. So that was our first one, just reaching out to the Asian community.
I mean, watching you play, the use of the fingers is just fantastic. You say you're still learning, so... How much more do you need to learn?
Oh, there is a lot.
Is there really?
Yeah. It's an endless learning journey in this, because it's not just rhythm. It's then introspecting it and then working out the cross rhythms, different calculations, and then just opens up new avenues every time I see my teacher.
Yeah, and I guess playing with other people is completely different as well, isn't it?
It is, yeah. You end up playing a different style, which is what kind of makes your music come to life. Instead of just a bookish knowledge. We don't read. Tabla is a language. If I said the same thing to another person, Dadi Dagina, he'd play what I've just said. Tabla is a language. So we try and use that language to work with any musician.
Well, and now with Luke from The Bridge, I think the first thing to say is explain what The Bridge is.
Okay, The Bridge Homelessness to Hope is a homeless charity based in Leicester near St Matthews. And we rely completely on funding. We're a non-profit organisation. We do lots of stuff. We help people with finding housing, accommodation, with their kind of benefits and things like that. Courses that they might need to do, clothing and food, of course. And we also have an arts sector, which I'm kind of involved in, really running a lot of creative sessions like music, photography.
I just saw you with the guitar a second ago. Anyway.
Yeah, yeah, we're sort of getting ourselves ready and in the mood for a performance here a little bit later on. So that'll be good.
So you're kind of running this thing then. So how did that happen? Did you just fall into it?
I knew someone I worked with elsewhere, basically, and I just started volunteering. It was like not December last year, but I've been there just over a year. Did a couple of voluntary sessions, and then people sort of said what I can do and showed a bit of what I can do, and then just started to start leading the sessions, really, and just developing projects from there. And it's gone in over a year. We've had a lot of good outcomes. We've got a few festivals that we're playing in the summer. We've got some exhibitions coming up of our photography work and stuff. So yeah, it's really cool.
It's quite a serious subject, the homeless situation, and given the kind of financial climate at the moment, it's a bit worrying, isn't it?
It's incredibly worrying. It's heartbreaking. and it's entirely unacceptable that we, a nation with such wealth and resources, can allow our citizens to live in this way. I just did a sleep out to raise money for the bridge and to raise awareness of the charity at Leicester Uni on it was on Tuesday. Mm-hmm. And as much as, I mean, it was safe, there was security, we had the comfort of all those things that homeless people don't have, and in no way could I imagine that I experienced what it might be like to be homeless, but emotionally it was a lot less comfortable than I was prepared for it being. And it's led me thinking all through the week about what would it be like when the weather's terrible and there is no security and there is no safety and there's constant noise and there's the constant light and every sound is something that you might need to be afraid of, you might need to worry about, you might need to be aware of. Everything smells, it's hard to keep things clean. It's unimaginable that people live like this, but they do, and increasingly so.
And we often see it on the street, you know, I'm probably like everybody else, tend to just walk on and ignore it. And people need to take notice, don't they?
They need to take notice. They need to petition councils and government and lobby them about this, because we can't, as we proved, as we showed, which was an awful thing really in some ways, it was good for people, but the fact that through COVID the council housed or they claimed to have housed most homeless people temporarily, and COVID's still here, and they're back on the street. Like, what kind of token sort of statement is that, really? And it shows what can be done if there's the will, if it were to be a priority at that level. Of course we can solve it. We have so many. I'm looking at vacant buildings, disused buildings in disrepair just standing here. We don't.
It's a waste.
It's criminal. Like, it's absolutely just not. It's not acceptable. I would like people to get more outraged about it. I really would.
And you're playing today, so you rehearsed something to perform, have you?
We've rehearsed. We've been rehearsing. We've been working really hard. As I say, we've got a gig at the Donkey coming up.
Yeah,
we're going to play the Riverside Festival. So we're kind of tuning up the band, getting ready to have like a bit
What's
of a big
called?
Summer. The band is called The Bridge.
Yeah, obviously.
Yeah.
It would be, wouldn't it?
Yeah, it seemed good. It works in many ways, I think. It's a bridge over to where we want to be. So.
Another of the workshop leaders was Kiz, founder of Hip Hop Heels and producer of a podcast called Glow With The Flow. Well, Kiz explained to me how music making is an important way for people to connect emotionally and to regulate their emotional states. Well, that was Luke from The Bridge. Interesting conversation about the band that he's brought about, that they're going to play here at The Curve today, and also about situation of homelessness. And that leads me to Kiz, who's just done a presentation about that aspect of life, really.
Yeah, it was really, really good to be here and share some stories from my work, because sometimes we forget when we're offering community workshops that there are certain community members that are not always on our radar or visible. And I think people are starting to think a lot more about migration, refugees, asylum seekers. But whenever I go to arts and health conferences or community arts things, I often wonder why the workshops haven't gone into hostels that I'm seeing presented on the stage, or why the homeless people aren't present in the conference. And I'm really happy that they're here today.
And also on your film, there was a gentleman talking about moving to a place with no electric and so on, and having to deal with that situation and feeling less of himself, really.
Yeah, when you get to the stage where you're on the street sleeping rough or having to bed down in a car, you know, homelessness also includes people sofa surfing as well. People tend to lose hope and feel as if they're not matching society's expectations, and it can be a self-fulfilling prophecy. So the gentleman that we were referring to is an MC who I interviewed for my podcast Glow With The Flow, and that conversation talked about how when music making happens in a group, we can co-regulate. And that, what that means is human beings calm human beings down. We are tribal, we are pack animals. We're not meant to live in little caves or in little huts or isolated little bee cells in these city skyscrapers where, you know, when you look in Japan into Tokyo, where people are sleeping in like a pod, that's not human connection, is it?
No.
We're meant to be with people. And they say in Africa that a village raises a child, and in different cultures, tribal cultures, if somebody's upset, if there's a death or a terrible tragedy, illness, the whole village comes and soothes and helps and sings and sits with the pain. And we've forgotten about that. We don't have the same connection. We're all too busy doing nothing. You know, we've got technology on our hands, but we haven't got time on our hands. So with music making, you get to sit. Your attention literally is on what is happening in the moment. So your worries start to fall away and you get to regulate your internal body systems through the rhythm, like I was talking about earlier. Your mother's heartbeat is your first mood regulator.
You see an analogy between hip hop and the heartbeat, wasn't it?
That's it. Hip hop is a heartbeat. And when you look at Naya Bingi drumming, it's a boom boom, boom boom, ch, boom boom, boom boom. There's that deep heartbeat pulse going through. And that drum sound is really, really cathartic. It helps to put people into, it's actually, there's research around where low vibrational repetitive rhythms can put you into like a trance-like state. And so when you see people using drums in religious ceremonies, or even like when cults in the 70s, yeah, with, you know, the film Wicker Man, you know, they show people drumming in that way, it's because the frequency of the drum beat gets you into like a mildly meditative state.
And being here at the Curve has been a bit quite a special day today, hasn't
it? It has, yeah. I've got to meet lots of different people, and I think the diversity of the crowd and the audience reflects the diversity of Leicester. So that is something that I'm really impressed by, and I strongly encourage anyone to come to future events by Drum and Brass because of the amazing work that you're doing to level out things like inequality and bring people into new spaces that maybe they wouldn't have felt welcome or accessible.
Great, good to meet you again.
Yeah, lovely to meet you, John.
In person this
yes.
time.
Yes, lovely. Thank you for
cheers.
Having me.
Okay, cheers. Hello, I'm now with Jenny Hand, who plays with the Leicester Symphony Orchestra, a recent production, of course, at De Montfort, playing film music.
Yep.
And you enjoy that?
Well, we enjoy playing together, building up our concerts. We do 3 concerts a year in De Montfort Hall. This year we're doing 4 because we've got Classic Elvis in June. So we're playing with a band, which is a bit different. And 2 different Elvises, I understand. So,
yeah, there's lots of them around,
yeah,
isn't there?
Yeah, yeah. So that's going to be a bit different. And then in May, we've just been talking about our next concert and what we've got lined up. Which is 3, it's a fairly straight classical concert, and we're going to add a prayer to Ukraine by a Ukrainian composer to it. We called it New Horizons because we're celebrating 100 years of Leicester Symphony Orchestra.
Wow.
And all of the composers we picked, Vaughan Williams, Shostakovich and Britten, written music just after the Second World War to look at the future. And of course, we're now in another war between Ukraine and Russia. And so we've had a bit of debate in the orchestra about how we reflect that in the programme. So we're going to add this prayer for Ukraine the programme. In the film concert, we added the Ukrainian national anthem, which you might have noticed if you'd been there.
Yeah,
and
yeah.
That was a last-minute thing on the day, and that went down really well with the audience. There's a little YouTube video of that that's been seen God knows how many hundreds of times, which is really good for us.
And of course, at the interval at De Montfort Hall, the No Bars Orchestra played.
Yep.
In the smaller room, and they're here today as well, and that's good actually, because it's young kids having a go.
Yeah, and there was a bit of a collaboration between the Leicester Symphony Orchestra and the No Bars. We did a small concert in November in the city centre, and some of our players played alongside them, and particularly the clarinets have a little clarinet quartet and a band, and that went down really well with the parents and the kids. And some of our cellists played as well. So we like to kind of think that we're moving out into the community and supporting. We've got some support from the Leicestershire Community Foundation for some free tickets for families on no incomes for our 3 concerts coming up. And we hope that widens our audience and gets more people along to listen to classical music in its different forms, different formats in De Montfort Hall. So, yeah.
And here today, obviously, learning about all sorts of aspects to do with inclusivity, really.
Yeah, I've really enjoyed the first session this morning. It made me go back to my days as a community worker in the city here, where one of the things that we put on was a little music and movement class for the mums and the children under three. And I think how important that was at the time. And I met a mum, sadly, at a funeral the other week of one of those little children, and she was telling me what her daughter's doing now and how she's been over to Australia and got children of her own, and she's got a great job. And just made me think how important music education is in those early years, and what sadly is probably missing from many of the children today.
Indeed, and yeah. That's obviously one of the debate points we've had today,
yeah,
as well.
Yeah, so perhaps in my retirement I should think about putting some more music back into the community. And that's, it's obviously made a difference to my career. While it's not been my professional career, the fact that I've played all the way through and been a leader in the voluntary sector, I've been CEO of a number of organisations, and I put that down to my music education.
Yeah. Okay, nice to talk to you. Enjoy the rest of the day.
Thank you.
Thank you. Well, the final practical workshop of the day was led by Leonie de Berry-Gur, whose musical practice encourages improvisation and experimental approaches to music making.
Beautiful day, full of making music and noise and creating weird sounds.
And well, we actually heard from the band, of course, The Bridge. You kind of introduced them. I know you've been working with them, haven't you?
I've visited them once. I actually worked really closely with Luke Broughton, who runs the project at The Bridge, Homelessness to Hope, which is a great charity in Leicester City Centre. And I invited The Bridge music group to come and play with us because I thought it was such a lovely example of making music differently.
Indeed. And is your thing about music therapy, how would you describe what you do?
Well, as an artist and musician, I think my practice is definitely therapeutic for myself, perhaps therapeutic for others, hopefully, in a way that I use music as a way to communicate and express stuff and get things out, and, you know...
It's almost a release, I guess, is it?
It definitely is. I think it's always been like that for me. And it's why I do a lot of improvised work. So I'm not subscribing to any particular song or lyrics or genre, really. So capturing like how I feel at the time or the place that I'm in. Also listening to what's going on around me, which I think is really important for any musician. And that's where my practice really lies.
And have you enjoyed listening to other people today as well? It's been inclusive, hasn't it?
Yeah. Very much so. I'm so pleased to be asked to come and join in today. And then we did some improvised exercises, and there's some beautiful music made out of nowhere. Which just goes to show how important an improvised and experimental approach to music making can be.
Yeah, we've had a kind of like a impromptu orchestra. We've had hip hop. You know, it's all been there,
experimental
hasn't it?
Choir. So, and all people from all different backgrounds as well, and playing together for the first time, which is so beautiful to hear.
So, where do you get to kind of practice what you're doing, so to speak?
Me personally, at the moment I'm practicing for a gig that I've got coming up at the end of April, so I'm playing quite regularly at the moment myself, but I do take long breaks in between music. I kind of have to have something to work on, otherwise music gets lost. So I always make sure I have a little project to do, which keeps me going. I think I need that kind of loose structure of a deadline in place to do stuff. Otherwise it's singing in the kitchen, tapping on the tables, which is, for me, I think it's that is music as well. That's practice.
And having Carol Leeming here is quite special as well.
Oh yeah, yeah, I love Carol. I've seen a lot of her shows. Hopefully going to do some work with her soon as well. She's a Leicester legend. Definitely, if you can listen to the recording, she'll have some great things to say. So make sure you tune into that.
Yeah, well, we're going to. In fact, tune into her now.
Tune into her now, yes. So I'll leave it to Carol to finish the conversation. Thank you so much for having me. It's been a great experience, and I hope that this continues and we keep making music accessible, which is a big thing for me. And that means open to people from all different walks of life, different ages, and celebrating diversity in the city as well through sound.
Great.
Thank you.
Thank you very much. Thank you.
Thank you.
Well, after the conference had concluded with reflective comments from Carol Leeming, MBE, I asked her to sum up the day for us.
Absolutely astonishing. So thrilled. I've learnt so many new things with some excellent speakers and presentations today. And, of course, a really interesting bunch that have turned up today for the conference. Lovely.
All about doing music differently, and I think we've learnt about that extensively, haven't we?
Well, yes, indeed, from Helen, who... I mean, sound painting, what a revelation that is. I'd heard of it, but I didn't know the detail of it, and I've learnt that today. And how accessible is that for people to be making music in a very accessible but very, very different way using physical body gestures? Marvellous. And then, of course, I was really struck by the hip-hop therapy that Riz told us about, because that was so important in terms of mental health and well-being, but also bringing in different genres of music and an understanding hip-hop culture as a way of life and using that in a therapeutic way. And then we had the marvellous Leonie DeBarry-Gurr, who got us toning in beautiful coloured lights in a darkened room, showing us that we can break down barriers and we don't have to use the same old paradigms, you know, in terms of how choirs are. You know, she called it the anti-choir approach, and getting the resonance of the room. Absolutely stimulating, creative day. I feel very energised by what I've heard and seen today.
And inclusivity was one of the words of the day as well. And we saw, you know, kids talking about homeless people, a video, and then we heard from a band who've got together.
Yeah, but also I think Julie Hogarth really set the tone of the day with an excellent introduction and really underscored the need for cultural diversity and inclusion and equalities in our music culture here in Britain today. And I think that's something that I also echoed in my summing up and my remarks at the end, that we really need to think out of the box. We need to decenter the Western music canon and embrace all the canons and music cultures of the people who've come here, who now live in Britain, from, you know, the Black, Asian, ethnic minority cultures, who many of whom have music canons far older than the West music canon and can teach us an awful lot. And
it's breaking down those barriers.
But also the importance of valuing them, and also not doing cultural appropriation, and valuing and remunerating and rewarding the music leaders from those cultures.
And so you'll take quite a lot from today, by the sounds of it.
Yes, I have learnt a lot, and I'm classed as a polymath. And all that means is I like learning and I can do lots of different things at a high level. But that's because I think I've fed my brain a lot. And today was a real feast for the brain.
Yeah, real inspiration as well.
Yes, it was indeed.
Well, great to see you as well. Have you ever been to the Riverside Festival, by the way?
Oh, of course. I've always gone. I haven't been for the last 2 years with COVID.
Yeah,
but
obviously, yeah.
I'll be there at the Riverside Festival. I always enjoy that. We get to see lots of local music.
We ought to get you to conduct,
makers.
I think.
Well, I have conducted in the past and I've always enjoyed it. But when looking at this sound painting, I found another language today of conducting. And you know, even Leonie had a different language of conduction. But, you know, it's about gesture. It's about the non-verbal. And I think I made the point that, you know, music is an international language insofar as that I can go and sit with a bunch of musicians somewhere in the world and, you know, make gestures and we can make beautiful sounds together.
Yeah. you had records out in the 90s. Yes. I was trying to remember
house
if I played
music.
I used to play that sort of thing.
Yeah, I've got a track in the film Trainspotting, and I've also got a track in Angie, which is a Hollywood film as well. Yeah. But I'm not really making house music. I've got an acoustic band at the moment, but I am messing around with psychedelic sounds. So yeah, because there is part of me that likes acoustic music and analog sounds and instruments, but there's also an inner sort of techno geek. I quite like digital sounds.
Yeah,
as
me
well.
Too actually. Yeah. I remember being in John Peel's office and all he was playing was techno.
Yeah. Well, you know, house got me in the late 80s, and it's had me ever since, really. I still play house music and enjoy house music an awful lot.
Yeah, me too. Okay, very good. Very good to see you today.
And anyway. You. Thank you so much.
Okay, cheers.
Bye.
You've been listening to Sounds Of, a podcast created by Drum & Brass, a community interest company focusing on music for community well-being with a focus on safety, inclusivity and diversity. Thank you for listening, and if you've enjoyed this episode, please subscribe and you'll hear about the next episode as soon as it drops. And do take a look around the Drum & Brass website, drumandbrass.co.uk, to find out about our many other projects. Our special thanks go to our funding partners, Arts Council England and Leicester City Council, to our producer and technical support, John Sinclair, and to you for listening today. Drum & Brass, putting the community in music and doing music differently. Thank you.